Well, welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 244.
There are many ways to help someone. You can bring them food during a busy or trying time. You can comfort them when they suffer a loss, or you could just spend time with them. This is something that Scripture tells us to do fully for those in the church. We're to suffer with those who suffer. We're to weep with those who weep, etc. There are also times we're to rejoice with those who rejoice. This may sound wonderful, but what if we were to rejoice with the person who just beat us out of a contest? We want to weep, but they want to rejoice. It's a mystery. The main point that the Lord wants us to understand is that we are all together in this Christian life, not just because we happen to live on this planet together, because we are all part of the building of the kingdom of God. When Jesus was on the Mount of Transfiguration, Moses and Elijah were there with him. They were speaking with him about the kingdom and his death. Although they had died hundreds of years before that time, they were still involved in the kingdom-building plan of God. Of course, they were on the post side of death. They were present with the Lord. That's the side they were on. The disciples were on the, we still have sin, fear, and sleepiness to get in the way of our understanding. If we try and remember that we are all part of God's ordained plan, we should have more sympathy for those who need more help in our churches. We are a collection of the strong and weak, the wise and the simple, the physically healthy and the sick. We may not understand why such and such happens in people's lives, but we can remember that God has a purpose for each event, and someday we will have a better understanding, but for now, we live by faith. We will discuss these things and answer some questions today on Theology Simply Profound.
Welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. My name is Bob Tarullo. I serve as pastor at Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church, and we are in Indian Head Park, Illinois. And of course, with me, as always, back from his round-the-world trips, speaking engagements, teaching galore, is our leader, Rob McKenzie.
Wow.
Rob
wow.
is a...
Maybe you are buttering me up.
Well, you did tell me, you're gonna say some really bad things about me in this episode.
Not
so.
Bad things, just true and hurtful. It's
Rob
true
used to
that
be
I
an elder here at Westminster.
Now, so that's emphasis on the ruling.
I said used to be.
oh, did you say used to be? Oh, well. Well, but you see, we are Presbyterian. You cannot.
Yeah, I can't do that on my own. No,
you can't defrock me or
no.
Fiat. Yeah.
No.
Actually, if you did that, then you'd kind of be proving that you are the.
I'm the bad guy.
The tyrannical dictator. Right. I almost did end up taking a round the world trip. I was supposed to. I flew to New Hampshire for this conference, and I paid the extra $20 to get the direct flight because I didn't want to make connections and have what should have been a 2.5 hour flight turn into a 7 hour flight.
Yeah, I hear you.
And so I woke up that morning and I get this nice, lovely text from my airline saying they've canceled my flight and they've very nicely put me on this other flight that has two stops and a plane change. And, I was basically bouncing around the country like a lotto ping pong ball. And it's with Southwest. And one of the great things about Southwest is that if you're there and you don't check luggage, you can try to, especially when your flight gets canceled, you can get on another flight.
Yeah.
So I basically just went there and went to the gate and kind of begged them and said, look, there's another direct flight over that leaves a little bit later. Can I just get on that? So they switched my flight, but I was not looking forward to 7.5 hours of travel time. When a flight travel time.
That happened to my family once. where they moved us last minute. And I was able, thankfully, to go online and switch it to another flight. It unfortunately cost more money, that new flight, but, it's annoying the new ways in which to me, it feels new. I hadn't had that happen before, but I've heard since 2020, that it happens a lot more where I'm sure it's for, you know, financial reasons, of course. But they just cancel a flight completely. And then they put you on a flight that doesn't work for you. It's like, I would have chosen that one if it worked for me. Yeah, it's annoying. So I'm sorry to hear that happened to you.
No, I said, no, it was fine. It worked out, but I was not looking forward to that. But you know, I enjoyed New Hampshire, got to deliver, was at the conference, delivered my paper.
What is the conference? And remind us of the paper.
Well, the conference was called Second Breakfast. It's a token conference, associated with Mythgard, University, run by Corey Olson.
So everyone that goes there is a hobbit because they eat a second breakfast, or
well, I think everybody should eat a second breakfast. I mean,
even elves.
All who care about the world. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I was able to deliver a paper on, which is in my book, Secrets Progress. I have an opening essay, and I was able to it was a kind of a modified version of that essay and deliver that. That was really good. It was received well. I had a great time listening to the other papers that were delivered and hanging out with the other Hobbit people.
And then on the Lord's Day, you went to the OPC congregation in Dover, New Hampshire?
Dover, New Hampshire, with David Kooning as the pastor there. And I had a great time. Always good to meet the other fellow saints, the people of God, to be with them and worship with them. I had a great time hanging out with David and Karen and their family.
And so girls. you found a Gaius that you could go, and there was someone there that could cook named, what's the name of that cook?
Tastes
so good.
I don't know.
Taste that which is good.
We don't do something 2 weeks or a week.
Taste that which is good. And, they fed you well, and then you flew back.
That's true. And I also got to hang out with somebody who I promised to keep her identity secret.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, I want to break my promise. But so Joanna was telling me that when you were in college, that you used to.
Joanna, you're in trouble, girl.
That you used to drive around, used to drive carloads of girls around singing to them in Hebrew, like some sort of Israeli gondola driver.
Wow. Now that's a stretch. Joanna. Maiden name Stalker, Joanna Stalker. Her and her sister from OPC Church in Maine, and they went to the same college. And yes, I did drive. They were not only girls. But I did drive several.
I don't know if that's better.
Why? Because it's a carpool, Rob.
And you were serenading the people of your car with your melodious. I don't know. Really? So you weren't singing to them in Hebrew?
I did sing in Hebrew, but I was not serenading. So there's two different things, correct. Rob. Two different things. Yes. One of the ways that our Hebrew prof at college helped us to learn Hebrew was by providing good Hebrew songs, and also a few Christian songs that were made into Hebrew, and they worked really well. Like King of Kings and Lord of Lords, actually the tune and the words translate well into Hebrew. And so that was probably the one that I would do a lot. And it was more of a teaching moment, Rob, here. See, I'm on the defensive because you have me serenading all these girls.
Apparently girls and guys, which,
yeah. Okay. But see, she probably forgot to tell you about moments of, you know, like when I would be pulled over on the way to church.
No, she told us about that too.
Oh, did she tell you about that one too? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was a bad one.
Did you serenade to the police officer?
No. The police officer was he was being very, very finicky that day because there had been an accident earlier that week. So I was like not speeding a lot.
Maybe if you had sung to him, he wouldn't have given you a ticket.
Maybe not. Maybe. But, you know, I was in the wrong. And so I deserved it. But that doesn't, that's never, never, well, that doesn't feel well as a college student coming into church, having been stopped, and getting a ticket and then having like all the other college students that passed you in their cars, seeing good. You pulled over, look back and as you're walking in late because you're on the side of the road. Yeah. That was not a pleasant moment. That was a kick in the pants to do better and drive better and to obey the laws of the land. Yeah, yeah. I feel a little hot right now. I'm feeling convicted of my sin at the once again.
Well, I'm going to start getting more. I mean, people are going to start like sending me notes telling me to stop being so mean to you. But
well, they should. They should send those notes in. But, you know, don't send them to Rob's personal account. Send them to the mail at reformforum.org account so that I can read them, too, because we both get them when you go to the mail at reformedforum.account. Not only me and true. Rob, but the whole Reform Forum staff gets them then.
Oh, that is true. Well, I do have a similar story. I'll give you an embarrassing story for me just to balance things out a little bit. Melody and I were driving to church. This was many years ago now. It was about 20 years ago. And we were late. And I was driving a tad over the speed limit. And I, you know, you come up over the rise and there's, you know, you see the lights on a car on the top of a overpass. And I tried to slow down, but sure enough, lights are on. He's after me. And so we pull over and he comes up and he's like, "Where are you going in such a hurry?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Well, actually I'm going to church." And he goes, "Church? We had to travel at that point. We had to travel 50 miles to get to this church." And he said, "Why are you driving such a long way?" I said, "Well, the preacher, this is the most reformed church we could find was 50 mm-hmm. miles away." And I said, "Well, the preaching is very good here." And he said, "You know, I've stopped a lot of people speeding when they've left church, but you're the first person I've stopped trying to get to church." So he left me off the warning.
Well, now that's very good.
It was very nice. But I definitely did not speed to get to church anymore. So me being away,
yes.
You know, and it really was a great time to have a wonderful hospitality from the people of God, which is what's happening with Christiana and the boys mm-hmm. and Mercy. They were tired. And they've been given this great hospitality. They've had food. They've had rest.
That was a great segue, by the way, Rob.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been working on those.
That was just so everyone's aware, that was about 15 minutes of us of introduction. And I heard from a listener, a very close listener, your wife, saying that she listened to one not too long ago. But she says she's behind, like March. And she said, "Man, the intro was so long. I was just like, when are they going to get to the content?"
Which is probably what she's saying to herself right now as she's listening. But
she won't get this until maybe next March.
Theme Melody, it's not me.
All right. So that great segue I ruined. But you're talking about the kids and the pilgrims on their way, finding hospitality in Gaius's house.
Well, not just that, but I mean, Matthew gets... betrothed,
gets engaged to
Mercy, and mm-hmm. actually before they end up leaving, they will get married. We'll talk about that at the end, but they will, and you know they don't. I mean, it was a little bit after they. It's not like they said go get married, and they got married that afternoon. I think it took a month, so their engagement was a month.
Well, yeah. So we in the reading for today, you actually learn almost at the outset that they get married.
Yeah.
And that they stay there for about a month, but you don't see the actual wedding until the end of the month. So it's a little bit of, I thought the organization was a little bit unique for Bunyan here. He sort of gives you, he's already given you a sense that they're going to be, that they are betrothed and then they're going to get married soon. But then he says it again,
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, we were stayed here for a long time, about a month, because everything was great, because Samuel whispered to Christiana, his mother, and said, "Mother, this is a very good man's house. Let us stay here a while." Right. And hearing that, they stay for a month. And then we learn that, well, at the end of the month, they're going to get married. And then at the end of we learn what happens during the month. After that, they get married. So it's like a lot of stuff about Matthew and Mercy getting married. Three different places it's mentioned. I thought it's unique for Bunyan here.
Yeah. I think that he's kind of looking at the fact that an engagement, he's kind of viewing that as almost on par with marriage, kind of like, you know, we talk about with Joseph and Mary, where they were engaged to be married, but they were, but you know, in order to actually break the engagement, it was almost like a divorce.
Yeah.
And so I think that's how Bunyan's kind of looking at this, that when they were betrothed to each other, that in essence, they are married, but they don't actually have this wedding ceremony until a month later. But yeah, so they're sitting at the table, and where we're picking up is mm-hmm. they're eating, and as they're eating, they're posing some riddles, which we're going to skip through some of that. Interesting. They're just having good godly conversation, which is the one thing, having read this for the first time about 25 years ago, the one thing I really took away from this is as we live our lives, having these times constantly where we're just talking about the things of God, you know, I mean, not 24/7, but, mm-hmm. but you know, this is more than just having your devotions every day, which are good, and praying every day, which is good. But this is also, you know, do we have times throughout the week that we're actually discussing the things of God with other Christians? And that's so much easier now, because you can do Skype or Zoom or just Facebook, each message, just Messenger. I mean, we can have conversations about the things of God with many different people, which before the internet, it was pretty much you had to get together or call on the phone, and that was a little more involved. But now we can just say, you know what, let me go read a passage, and then you can, you know, go to a chat room, a Christian chat room, and talk to people about Hebrews 3 that you just read. And it's a wonderful thing. And that's what Bunyan keeps bringing up, especially with Christiana. Did this a little bit with Christian as well. But the Christiana will say at times, you know, let's walk together and talk about the things of God. And I think it's just very important to Bunyan, and it should be very important to us.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. Generally, the concept, I'm not so sure I would want to go as far as what you said with regard to the internet and the communications. It does make it easier, but I do think the being in person and with people also changes
the
dynamic of it and increases yeah. its value. Now, I don't think you were saying otherwise, but I don't want to diminish the need for making the time and taking the energy to get together and to schedule things, to be with people.
I agree. I guess I would also
I know
say
you, that I know you do. Yeah.
Even when I was saying that, yeah. I was thinking not necessarily that you were, you know, always, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to go talk with these strangers, mm-hmm. which is fine, because as Christians, we can talk to each other. But I was thinking about more of, your friends and family,
sure,
who are Christians, that, you know, that's who you're getting online with, that you can have these conversations.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate
you're right that being together in person is far superior.
The ability to get to, you know, one of our members is in Japan, and the ability to interact mm-hmm. with him and him zoom in to our Bible study because we're still doing Bible study via Zoom with some people, and having that option for one reason or another, I think is great, but we're still meeting in person as well. And being able to do that, you know, having people passing through, like, you know, you guys just did in your home, people passing through, visiting us in worship, and they spend the night at your place, and then interacting with them and talking with them about the things of God, or, you know, what the Lord is doing in their lives in this time, you know, is great. You being, you know, going and traveling to New Hampshire and being able to talk with brethren that you know from years past catching up about how the Lord has been working in your lives. I mean, that's what I see happening here in Gaius. Now, Gaius is a new person to them, but over the course of a month, it's not new anymore, right? And they're not just talking about things of God. You know, we see Mercy is making things still, right? She's making coats and doing stuff to give to the poor or to make use of themselves. So, but to have our conversations to be edifying and to build up and to be of help to others in their Christian faith is a good thing to be reminded of. And that can come in a variety of different ways. And some of us do it much better than others, right? Some of us can just get right in there and ask the pointed questions that get us on the right track for talking about our Christian lives. Some of us, you know, walk around and sort of meander to get there and do it in a way that's more comfortable maybe. So there's different ways of getting to conversations like that. But as Christians, it's good for us to be reminded of wholesome and good conversation that's edifying. And, you know, having to do with someone's work, their job, their family, their church life, their own personal spiritual life, things of that nature. It's good. Now, getting there by way of riddles, that's not a way that I've typically gotten there. Right. I am not a riddle person at all. I wish I was, because I think they're cool, but I'm just not that good at it.
Yeah, I never think of having a conversation where we're going to, you know, let me pose you a riddle. It's more, let me ask you. I guess if I really thought about it, I could probably start coming up with riddles, but I just, you know, let me ask you a question. I think that's more where I'd be. So they end up talking about, because they talk about several things, but one of the things I found interesting was they were talking about older Christians and younger Christians and the advantages and the disadvantages to these people. And what's interesting is that you have young Christians at the table and you also have older Christians at the table. Mr. Honesty is pretty old. Mm-hmm. And then you think that like Gaius and Greatheart are more, you know, they're adults. You know, maybe guys to the middle age. So you have people of all different ages at this table, and they're talking about advantages and disadvantages based on your age, based on whether or not you're, they bring up the idea of people starting out on the Christian road. One is younger, one is older, and the differences that they might experience within the Christian faith because of how they see life. So what advantages do older Christians have in the church, in the congregation?
Yeah, well, they talk about, Honesty talks about, old man Honesty talks about, just simple experience, right? And that's, you know, one of the words, the euphemism he uses for being old is an experienced Christian. And they have the ability in Honesty's mind to overcome sin more quickly than those who are young, because they have experience of being of fighting sin. And there's wisdom, right? There's wisdom that comes with experience, right. And then they're able then to be able to instruct and help those who are younger, and you know, this is something to remember, of course, for us in our particular age, because we live in an age where that which is old is not considered to be that which is good. Mm. And just from a variety of things, we're a consumerist society, which there's nothing bad in that, but it has led us to be throwaway society as well. And so if something isn't is used and old, you get rid of it. And we've almost gotten to the point where we do that with, you know, older people, and right. we put them away. We put them into homes and never get visited. We forget about them and their needs or their concerns, or that they are wise and have years in front of us. And so especially those within the Christian church must consider the aged among them and their concerns and needs in a way that would not model the world or example or find itself conformed to the world in this way, but would in fact look to the aged among us, the more experienced, the more wise, and seek wisdom from them. Seek, hey, how would you deal with a situation like this? What are some, you know, what's some wisdom that you would impart to someone my age and my circumstances, you know, say a middle-aged dad with kids going off to college or whatever, or to a new dad, or to a teenager, you know? So this is something that the church needs to continue to do if it is doing, and if it is not, needs to make sure it is not neglecting its aged, and is in fact, you know, using the gifts that they still have and are still able to. Now, mind you, of course, you get to an age, sometimes they just, there's not an ability to be a part of the local congregation as much as they once were. But as long as they are present, as long as they are an active member of the church, there should be this ability or the willingness to seek that wisdom from them. And if they're no longer an active member of the church, to visit them and be a part of their lives still and talk, even if they're immobile and unable to come and be a part of the congregation, you know, sort of in the regular sense. Sorry, yeah, that's more than you were looking for, but.
Right. No, that's really good. I think that we need to understand that you know, God has given older Christians, you know, specifically to help the younger Christians, because eventually those people will be gone. And the wisdom that they've gained and the advice that they can give is something that when they're gone is gone with them. And at least from that person that you know and you get to worship with each week. And there's something special. I mean, how many times do you think back to when you were younger and you might have talked to somebody, just somebody in the church that was older, and you asked them about something and that still sticks with you?
Yeah,
I think you hear about, you know, I know, I remember back, you know, when I was a teen and that, and talking to different you know, adults about different things in the Christian life. I still remember those things. They're still helpful. I think for the older Christians that there's also disadvantages, though, that older, you know, at least in my observation, they didn't really, Bunny doesn't really go into this, but just I think that I've noticed when people get older in the Christian life, they can start capitulating on some things that they never would have capitulated on when it comes to doctrine, especially that things that they would have doctrines, you know, let's just say, you know, the inspiration of Scripture, or, you know, the authority of Scripture, or, you know, maybe they were, had a very staunch, understanding of, substitutionary atonement or things like that. It seems like there's some Christians when they get older, that those things that should still matter because they're core doctrines, they're willing to just say, well, you know, they're not as important. And sometimes this has to do with when they retire and they'll go to like retirement, or they'll move out of state and they'll go somewhere else and they'll go to a church that they never would have gone to when they were younger. And there is a better church in the area, but this church maybe has their grandkids, or maybe this church is just closer to where they're living now. And it saddens me and it worries me that I never want to do that, but I've noticed that is a danger for people as they get older.
It's not something I can, it's not my familiar. I'm not familiar with that, to be honest. I haven't seen that.
Right. That's what I'm saying. This is my observation.
Okay. Yeah. What about the young? He talks about like the younger too, doesn't he?
Yes. Yes. The advantages to the young are that they have this innocent faith that, you know, scripture talks about as a childlike faith, where they believe, and they're staunch believers, and they don't have these nuances. It's just, they understand, you know, I'm saved because Christ died for me, and without him, there is no hope. And there's, you know, sometimes we talk about people when they're younger that may become Calvinists, that they end up in this cage stage. And the reason why you have to put them in a cage, because they're just out there, just out talking doctrine and everything they say might be completely biblical, but they do it in such a way that it's kind of just alarming to people. They're putting people on their heels, and it's a little more argumentative than it really needs to be. But there's such a fire for the gospel that you don't want to quench that fire, but you do want to kind of like maybe put them in a cage so they'll calm down a little bit. But when people get older, you know, 20 years later, whereas they used to be people that were always talking about the things of God, always talking about the gospel, and now they're more, you know, they're more wiser and everything, but they've also kind of lost that fire, you know, that it's become passé, and everything in the Christian life, everything in their life can become passé, but that, you know, what is it, Lord, I think it's Steve Camp actually has a line in his song, one of his songs, I can't remember which song, it's been a while since I've listened to it.
Who's Steve Camp?
Steve Camp's a Christian singer.
Oh, okay.
He has a song that he wants God to renew the fire within him that he used to have for the things of God, that because now life has kind of worn him down a bit and gotten into the place where he just, you know, going to church and being a Christian has become more passé. So he wants God to renew that fire within him, so that he might have passion again for the gospel.
Well, there are questions and questions and questions that come around this table that they're eating at. There are riddles, and then a question, and then another question comes up. And because they're, Christiana asks James to read Isaiah 53. Mm-hmm. And when he had done that, Mr. Honest decides to ask a question, and I'll ask you the question, Rob.
Okay.
So he says, when he had done, Mr. Honest asked why it was said in Isaiah 53 that the Savior is said to come out of a dry ground, and also that he had no form nor comeliness in him. What say ye? How does Greatheart answer?
Well, Greatheart answers that the reason why Jesus is, you know, he's what, he has no reputation, he's not rich, he's poor, he doesn't come from, I mean, the people in the area would look at Joseph and say, yeah, he's just a carpenter. That's what they say about Jesus. Isn't this a carpenter's son? And he isn't, he's not, you know, he's the shorter, less attractive guy in the room that nobody notices. And the reason why is because there's nothing about him as a person that is going to make people want to follow him.
You mean as a physical?
As a physical.
Yeah. Yeah. And his physical appearance.
Right. And his parentage or his background. There's nothing about him that people want to, that's an advantage. And it's only through his teaching. So when people follow him, it's because of what he's teaching, not because of his physical or his bank account or his parentage.
Yeah, yeah. From the content and the way in which he does it, right? That said, he does it with authority, but it's mm-hmm. it's the comeliness that he just isn't something great to look upon. And we, you know, from this, it has to be said because we look upon a person's stature or their build and make mm-hmm. assessments. It's what we do. We see it throughout the Old Testament, Saul or David, and the comparison between the two. I mean, David is considered a handsome fellow, but
right.
he's not a tall, strapping man when he first comes on the scene. He's a boy. But Saul is tall. He, you know, he's got a presence about him when he walks in. They want a king like that because he's like the world. He's got, you know, there's a mightiness to him, a power about him.
Right.
And we do this, right? We see someone and there's a certain structure to their face. There's a certain build to their shoulders, or a height, muscular, that we say and we make an assessment of, is he a, he's a strong leader. We know it, right? Just because we look at him that way. She's a beautiful woman. We find that person attractive because of certain features. And we make assessments very quickly based upon those things. But God in this is saying, you're not going to be able to do that with Jesus. You're not going to look at him and be able to make an assessment. That's the Son of God. Or that is the King of Kings. And it's very interesting that Bunyan brings us up at this point. Do you get a sense of why he's doing that at this point? Or is it just a miscellaneous question like the others are, supposedly?
Yeah, I was thinking about that as I was reading it. Like, why throw this in here now? And it could just be because we're talking about the wisdom. If you're older in the church, you have that immediate, well, they're wise. You know, they've been in the church a long time. They're older in life. They should have wisdom, and they should. But not all do. And so just by the appearance of somebody is not how we need to assess them. And then with youth, it's they are going to be less experienced. They're going to be less wise. But again, just because they're youth doesn't mean that they don't have wisdom. And this is Timothy. You know, this is Paul telling Timothy, don't let people despise your youth. And apparently that's what was happening. People were looking at him saying, well, he's so young. How can he have wisdom? Because he wasn't older. So it could be that that's what he's trying to tie in. Mm-hmm. That appearance is not what we need to look at as far as where wisdom comes from. It is by the what is actually said, the content of what is said, and where the truth of that content comes from. So the truth being the word of God. If someone is telling you something spiritual in life and what they're saying is not matched with the word of God, then what they've told you is actually not wise. It's not wisdom. But, you know, Bunyan doesn't tell us exactly why he's putting these together.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. So I'm just saying that it's I'm not sure.
Okay. I was just looking back a little bit from where I read the question from. About Isaiah 53. And at the beginning of that paragraph, it says, thus they sat talking till day of break or break of day. Mm-hmm. Now, when the family was up, Christiana bid her son James. So the sense of a context here is that several of them, the adults, stayed up all night long. Mm-hmm. And I think a little bit later, someone nods off a little bit. And they say, hey, wait a minute, it's time to wake up. You can't fall asleep now. go ahead.
I think there's a connection.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I do.
No, sorry, I looked back and I saw it was Mr. Honest, right? He's the old guy.
And he's all wolf.
Yeah, it says he began to nod. And so the guy is just like, hey, here's an old riddle. It'll wake you up.
Instead of saying, maybe we should go to bed.
Exactly.
But that's what Bunyan's trying to do. It's like, you know, who needs sleep? We'll sleep when we're old. A girl, Mr. Honesty is old.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do think there's a connection between what is being talked about with the youth and the experience, the older person, and a character that's going to show up in just a few minutes in the story that we're going to talk about, that there is, there's a parallel within the church as to all three of these categories of people.
Okay.
The
categories.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. When we get there, because when they're done, they decide that they're going to go on an adventure, which is really, so they're done talking. They've eaten their food. Maybe the kids have gone to sleep and had a nap. Who knows? We don't know if any of them actually have slept that night. But then they decide that they're going to go on this adventure. Where are they going?
Well, I think this is the title of this podcast, From Supper to Slaying.
Yeah.
Because, all right, so the picture that I have in my head, right, is a group of Christians, wonderful, enjoying, you know, I'm thinking they're in this little room of a house of some sort, and they're well fed. They've moved from the dining table, the supper table, into a room where they're comfortable. There is a warm fire going, and they're enjoying, you know, mulled cider or tea or a cordial of some form in the evening, and they're just laughing and talking God talk, right, and encouraging one another in the faith. And the kids have gone to sleep. Old Honesty is gotten a little tired, but more riddles come, so it wakes up his spirit. Morning breaks, and it's, hey, read some, or Isaiah 53. James does that, and there's a few more questions. And then Gaius is like, you know what? Since we're here and we finished the talking.
And Greatheart has got good armor and weapons.
Yeah, he says, well, said Gaius, now you are here. And since, as I know, Mr. Greatheart is good at his weapons, if you please. After we've refreshed ourselves, you know, let's, you know, throw a little water on our face.
Sure, yeah.
We'll walk into the fields to see if we can do any good in the fields. About a mile from hence, there is one Slaygood, a giant, that doth much annoy the king's highway in these parts. And I know whereabout his haunt is. He is master of a number of thieves. 'Twould be well if we could go clear these parts of him. So, you know, we're just having a great old time. And you know what? How else are you going to follow up a great meal and good conversation, but not go out on a hunt?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm getting. You're going out on a hunt after, you know, and you're going to go slay another giant. It's just this. I don't know. That's the picture.
It really gave me this this idea of, I don't know if you ever played an MMO game like World of Warcraft, or the one I played, Lord of the Rings Online, where you get these quests.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you go off and you do them, and that's what this really feels like. Yeah, like they're sitting here, and now somebody's given them this quest. All right, go out and kill this giant, and then you'll come back and we'll give you some really better shoes to wear, and maybe a few pieces of gold and silver, and then we'll give you another quest, and then you can level up, you know. And it's just because it was just out of the blue that Bunyan throws this in there, and I think it's because Bunyan just
transitioning.
He wants to get this other character. It is a way to transition, but I think it's because he's trying to build a vision of capability of people within the church, and how within the church we are all to be helping each other, and that we are not monolithic. There are people there are young people in the church, there are older people in the church, there are wise people in the church, there are people who aren't so wise, there are people that have that simple faith that cannot be wavered, and then there's other people that are always asking, am I really a Christian? Am I really a Christian? So our church is filled with different people, and I think that that's what he's trying to get to.
It's another way of getting another person in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another type of person to talk about. Yeah.
Right. And let me ask you this about the giant's name, because I think this is very interesting.
Okay.
Does his name mean, because his name is Slaygood, does he mean that he is good at slaying, or that he slays good?
Well, my first reading of it, which is what I'm thinking at the moment, is that he is a slayer of good.
Yeah.
He slays good. And one way that he does that, right, it says that he is the master of a bunch of thieves. And we've heard about all the robberies that have been taking place along the highway. So the assumption that I'm making, the connections I'm making, is that the thieves that are out on the King's Highway that have been troubling the pilgrims are his thieves. They're under his command. And he is trying to slay or disrupt or hurt, do whatever he can to the pilgrims that are along the way. And they are the good. They're that which is good. And hurting that which is good, the king's people, the king's pilgrims, the attempt is obviously to hurt the king. To me, it brings to mind what Jesus says, the exalted Jesus says to Saul along the road, on the road to Damascus, when he says, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?"
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I'm probably reading a lot into that, but just the fact of there being this Slaygood who masters these thieves, and the thieves are hurting the pilgrims, you know, it's the pilgrims that are representative or children of the king that are being hurt. And so the slayer of good is trying to hurt that which is good, the ultimate good, the king.
Right.
So that's what I took as Slaygood.
Right. I mean, you mentioned the thieves, and Bunny keeps bringing up these thieves. Mm-hmm. We never see them, but he keeps talking about them, that, you know, because they get reports, thieves are on the road. You know, that we're told that these thieves are the ones who have stole Little Faith's, or robbed him, and in the first part, the first book.
Right.
But we keep hearing about them. They keep popping up, but we never see them. I think it's interesting that he keeps bringing these thieves, the fear of these thieves for the party, because it's always harder when you're anticipating something bad than even when you're going through it. Usually, you know, that I found that I'd rather be going through something than to be waiting for it. I think it's Pippin that says in those or Return of the King, when he's waiting for the war that he knows is coming, the battle's going to happen in the morning. And he talks about how unbearable it is to be waiting on the eve of war. And I think that that's very wise of Tolkien to point that out, that of course he experienced real war in World War I.
Right.
And so he knew what he was talking about when he talks about the eve of battle. And that's what I get with these thieves, that they're always there. The threat of them is always there. Of course, now we find that they actually have a master. And of course, he's a giant, Slaygood. And they go, they know where he is. And it's almost like Gaius is waiting for somebody to come that has the kind of weaponry that Greatheart has to go out there. But something else happens as they go out that's a change with the party. They all get weapons.
Yeah, that's so Greatheart is with his sword, helmet, and shield, and the rest get spears and staves. Yeah. So they're all gonna have weaponry to go take out the beast, the giant. Yeah, I mean, all I'm picturing here is like Beating the Beast and all the town folk running out to get him.
Coming at him with pitchforks and torches.
Right, pitchforks and torches and such. Now, that's not what's happening here, obviously, no. Right? Because this is a devilish beast, or right. Giant, I should say. But, you know, you get the sense of the whole family, you know, going to slay right. this one. I mean, the kids got staves too. I mean, they're just...
Yeah, well, it seems like they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the kids are going into war. The kids are going to battle. They're not staying home, as far as we
can tell. This is the first time that from either book where the main characters, the party that's traveling on the road, goes out to fight, that they're on the offensive. All the rest of the times it was always defensive. They were always, they would come up upon a giant or the lions or Apollyon.
That's right. Yeah.
But now they're going out. And I think that all this talk that they've had, you know, they've spoken all night about the things of God. They've, spiritually, they've had good food. And it's this preparation for the party to now go out and to do good, to stop evil, to slay the giant that is harming others. Because this giant is not a threat to them. Now, it might be Gaius, because he's saying, okay, I know where this guy is. He's troubles pilgrims on the road, but he's not posing a threat at that moment to anybody. But they're going to go on the offensive, and that's a big change for the party as they travel.
And along the way, or not along the way, when they get there,
they get there. Yeah,
It's not as though he's empty-handed.
Right. They get there in the nick of time.
They get there and they get to save one feeble mind. Right? Feeble mind?
Yeah.
Yeah, feeble mind.
Yes, feeble mind. Yeah. They come to the cave. Gaius takes them there. He says, I know where this is. And it's almost as if this giant has feeble mind in his hands. Kind of like, think about a giant corn of cob, and he is about to
pick off the
eat the flesh. This is what we're told. This is what Bunyan says. He's about to eat the flesh of feeble mind. He's going to devour him. And that's when this party shows up.
When they came to the place where he was, they found him with one feeble mind in his hands, whom his servants had brought unto him, having taken him in the way. Now the giant was rifling him with a purpose. After that, to pick his bones, for he was one of the nature of flesh eaters. Sorry.
So cannibalism is funny to you, is it?
No, it's not funny at all. It's just, it's it new. Is, it's new.
A great description.
It's a new thing we're seeing here in right. the book. I laughed. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I think, I don't think we have too many cannibals listening.
It's
a funny scene. I mean, it's set up. I mean, just again, just the fact that he's standing there, you almost see him about to take a bite. And then this troop of armed Christians show up and he kind of looks over at him like, what are you doing here? Why have you troubled me?
He demanded what for them to want. It's like there's now like a fence of people at the end of his cave,
yeah.
And he's seeing them silhouetted there against a backdrop of light of some sort. And yeah, hey, what are you doing here? I'm about to eat dinner, you know. And you know they're just gonna. He just wants to like, yeah, I'll start with his fingers. I'll have a little appetizer for.
Okay, you're thinking about this way too much.
Sorry,
I'm glad I'm not there. It says that because he puts down, they say they're here, they're to do battle. They're, you know, he puts down feeble mind and grabs his own weapons. He comes out against them and it talks about how they're all fighting. It seems that they're all fighting, but eventually it's really just the giant and Greatheart because they're the ones that are kind of, so I think that while the rest of the group did join in battle at some point, everybody was tired. I mean, nobody slept. But I think it's just kind of a natural, it was natural for it to end up being the giant and Greatheart going after each other. And eventually Greatheart slays this giant. And they do something a little different. Although, again, Bunyan always likes to throw in things that happen in scripture.
Yeah, yeah.
Just into his story.
Very reminiscent here.
Yeah, so they cut off his head, like yeah. Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bring it back to Gaius's house, and they take Feeble Mind, who is very thankful to have not been eaten by this giant. And they take him back, and they put the giant's head on a pike. And it says, as they've done with other giants.
Right, right. We didn't learn about that until just now.
Right. So apparently this is like Gaius's hobby, to go out, kill giants, cut off their head and put it on pikes in his front yard, like pink flamingos.
Yeah. I mean, it says for a terror to those that shall attempt to do as he hereafter. So, you know, like the traditional, the point of it is to ward off those who would seek to harm those inside. Is how I'm reading it. But it was nearby. It was at home. And, well, it says here as well, I don't know if you noticed this, Rob, it says when they come home, they showed his head to the family. So maybe right. The kids stayed home. What do you think?
No, I think that's Gaius's wife and daughter.
To Gaius's family. Okay.
Right. Because when it armed them, it talked about them all getting these weapons.
Yeah, no, I saw that. Yeah.
The group. So mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is Gaius's wife and daughter.
Okay.
Look, I got another one.
Hey, look, check what I got.
Greatheart got another one for me.
I think one thing that we shouldn't jest too much about here is that this is not, right? I mean, we battle against not flesh and blood, right? We're not to go out and take swords and staves and yes. kill those whom we think are our enemies. Right. It's not that. This is another world, as you right. said. This is a secondary world where there are giants that are representative and of evil and the forces right. and principalities of the kingdom of darkness. And those things can be slain as they are represented right. in this. But we ought not to take weapons of war into spiritual battles here on in this primary world that we live in.
Right, right. As much as I believe that Bunyan's secondary world has been neglected, literary speaking, mm-hmm. but I never want to lose sight of the fact that this is all allegory.
Yes.
And that he's trying to teach us lessons with his secondary world.
Yeah, yeah. My kingdom is not of this world, is what Jesus says to Pilate, and does not want Peter slicing off ears, and neither exactly. should we be slicing exactly. off heads. Yeah. Yeah, David did it, but different context, different yeah. redemptive historical context. Keep that in mind, everybody, okay? Okay.
So they rescue Feeble Mind, and this is where I think the contrast to what was happening before comes in, where mm-hmm. you know, you have these young people in the church, and we talked about them. You have older people in the church, and we talked about them. There's advantages, there's disadvantages, no matter where you are in life. Well, now you have somebody that's in the church that he says that he's feeble all over.
Yeah.
He has a feeble mind. He has a feeble spirit. He has a feeble physical body.
Yeah.
Everything about him is feeble. And he says, this is who I am. And we're told that, you know, he had the hill difficulty was actually too difficult for him. Mm-hmm. So a servant from Interpreter's House came and actually carried him up the hill.
Yeah.
And what Bunyan is telling us, or what Feeble Mind is saying in the actual story, saying that he has to rely upon other pilgrims to make it to the Celestial City, but he will make it to the Celestial City if he has to crawl there on his hands and knees. Mm-hmm. So it's not about whether or not he's saved. He's a true believer. Go ahead.
No, he just needs help getting there. I was just waiting to say the same thing that you were, and just put on top of it. What's interesting about this is this isn't like before. We've heard about stories about self-will. We heard stories about little faith, and we've heard stories about others. This is Feeble Mind speaking about himself
yeah.
in this way, giving this description, which comes right. off better literarily in the storyline of yeah. him knowing his own physical weaknesses, his own spiritual weaknesses, his own mental weaknesses and emotional weaknesses.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And knowing the need that he has of others to help him along the way. So he asks for the help. He gets the help that is necessary. Whereas, you know, that's just, you know, plop that into our and our world. Not all the time are we really ready to ask for that help. Nor are we ready to recognize when we are weak in a particular area such that we would need the help. Let alone, you know, be willing to describe ourselves in this way to other people, other believers even. It just doesn't happen these days.
Right.
We present ourselves in a way that is oftentimes, a little bit better than we really are when we know our true selves to be. But I've never met anyone that introduced themselves as feeble-minded, right? Or weak, yeah. constitutionally weak. Now we know people that are, right? They're just physically, yeah. they're always battling some type of chronic illness. They're always battling something in their body, if it's not one thing or another. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, someone that might have a disease like cancer or something that comes upon them and then they have to battle it and then they're done with it. But there are people that are just physically constrained throughout their lives in one way or another.
Right. No, absolutely.
It's just just a wonderful description yeah, here.
It really is. It's like you said, it's a great character that he's put in, especially when you contrast what they were just talking about at the table, that we need each other in the church. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just as the old can learn from the young to regain that passion for the gospel, mm-hmm. and the young can learn from the old in the wisdom, but there's always people in the church like that are feeble, whether in mind, spirit, or body, or all three, that will take that everybody in the church is going to need to at some point come alongside that person and help them through some situation. Mm-hmm. And because it's a constant thing. And I think these, it's easy for people who aren't of that constitution and don't have those struggles. It's really easy for those people to look upon the people that are weaker and almost resent them. Because why, you know, oh my goodness, I got to help this person again. Mm-hmm. You know, why can't they be stronger? Well, they're not. That's right. The point. They're not. And God's given them to you so that you might minister to them in the name of our Lord.
Yeah, for them and for yourself.
Sure.
For God's glory and for your sanctification, right? I mean, right. When it's hard for you to do something like that, to show that extra effort, to do that extra thing, then you're being trained up to learn how to serve and to learn how to be kind and generous to someone that is very difficult, maybe challenging for you to do that because it feels like it's a constant burden on you or something of that nature.
Right. It's interesting that you brought up Little Faith, because Little Faith, he's, again, these robbers are the same robbers, which we didn't see mm-hmm. with the giant, which is interesting. Again, it's always the fear that we have of these thieves, but they robbed Little Faith and he was still, still a believer, still a Christian within the church. But what he became known for was always going to other Christians and complaining about how horrible his life's been and how he was robbed and how he had all this stuff taken from him and how everybody should pity him. And this is in stark contrast to Mr. Feeble Mind.
Yeah,
because
go ahead.
Of the Constitution. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, you're absolutely right. And I really do like how Bunyan puts all of this. We've said what I'm about to read before, but I think the way he puts it is helpful and instructive. This is Feeble Mind talking after the hell difficulty, how he talked about the hell difficulty and getting people to help him up. He says, "Indeed, I have found much relief from pilgrims, though none was willing to go so softly as I am forced to do. Yet still as they came on, they bid me be of good cheer and said that it was the will of their Lord that comfort should be given to the feeble-minded." And he cites 1 Thessalonians 5:14. "And so went on their pace." So along the road, people are coming by him that can go much quicker, and they help him along the way. But you don't hear any complaining from Feeble Mind. Yeah. You hear that this help is coming to him. You know, whoever wants to be helped, right? Who wants to be lifted up and carried up a mountain, right? Or the hill difficulty? Who wants to have that done? But he appears to be submitting himself to the will of the Lord through these things. And he says, "When I was come," now bringing it up to the present circumstances, "to a salt lane." That's when you take the other road.
Yeah, yes, exactly right.
But
what's my GPS
say? But this
say?
Is
where's
much like Vanity route? Fair being right on the way, right? The way turns into, there's this name change, a salt lane. "Then this giant met with me and bid me prepare for an encounter. But alas, feeble one that I was, I had more need of a cordial. So he came up and took me. I conceded he should not kill me. Also, when he had got me into this den, since I went not with him willingly," so he did try to fight, "I believed I should come out alive again.
Right.
Though I die, yet shall I live." You get a sense there, right? "For I have heard that not any pilgrim that is taken captive by violent hands, if he keeps heart whole towards his master, is, by the laws of providence, to die by the hand of the enemy. Robbed I look to be, and robbed to be sure I am. But I am, as you see, escaped with life, for the which I thank my king as author and you as means." That's so cool that he gets primary means and secondary means of salvation and escape and the way that we move, that God moves through providence to bring about circumstances in our lives. I was like, yeah, okay, that's cool, Bunyan. Well done.
Because it's not his faith that's feeble.
No, not at all.
It's incredible that this is not talking about somebody that is not a strong believer. This is talking about somebody that just through temperament and physicalness, and that is just somebody that struggles with everyday living in life. But his faith is incredible.
Yeah. Constitutionally, he is just just physically weak. Spiritually, he's a giant.
So we end this episode and this section with where we actually see Matthew and Mercy. They get married. We are to that. Now they're going to get married. But not to be outdone, James also gets married.
Yeah, I thought he was a little younger than this, daughter. But, you know.
Well, everybody gave their blessings, so it must be all right. Gaius and maybe James and Matthew are actually twins. Who knows? We're never told.
You mean same age. I see.
Yeah, I don't.
Right.
But yeah, so James marries Gaius's daughter, Phoebe. So they leave with the good advice that godly wives are found for the boys.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Of course, you can find us at reformedforum.org. You can contact us at mail@reformforum.org. And if you want to check out the congregation that Rob and I serve, you can go to westminsteropc.org. For more OP congregations within the Chicagoland area, go to chicagoreformed.org. When you go to reformforum.org, also check out the conference site there. The conference is coming up very soon, the weekend of October the 8th. And so you're going to want to check that out. I think there's still room down in Austin, Texas, is where the conference is going to be. All right. Well, once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.